Good morning. Welcome to Dungeons & Diapers. I'm your host, Ryan Murphy, and joining me today on Discord is Crofton Steers, my co-host today. Crofton, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. I'm good.
That's very good. Now, Crofton, I understand this is your first strike. So how are things going?
That's a really good question, Ryan. I'd say that they're going pretty well.
Very good. Well, that's the bit. Welcome to Dungeons & Diapers, everybody. This is the show where we do cold opens that sometimes don't work. Sometimes they feel a little forced. That one was perfect, though.
Yeah, not that one. That one was nailed it.
That one was amazing. So I'm your host, Ryan Murphy. Crofton Steers is joining me, as always. And we are going to talk about the geeky things we're up to in the dungeon section. And then when we get to the diaper section, for those that have been listening since episode 100, we do a topic. And tonight's topic is ads, advertising, and how they impact our kids, where they see them, how it impacts how they act in a store, maybe, or around Christmas time. But we'll talk about all of that and how it's changed since we were kids, because it has obviously changed quite a bit. But before that, I have a story here, a news story, Crofton. I figured we'd start light. You and I both enjoy the Thursday books, and some of us have read more than the other. We won't name names, but they're making a movie. And it got acquired or picked up by Netflix, and I wanted to go through this cast. So they've cast three people so far, three of the sort of main characters, all but Joyce, essentially. We don't know who's playing Joyce yet. But how do you feel about these names? These are pretty top-tier stars. Like, it's pretty crazy.
You're talking about the Thursday Murder Club
yes.
movies?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I had seen interviews with Richard Osman, the author, well before this casting announcement, and he was talking about sort of big names, and there's been a lot of sort of fan casting. So the three names that have been attached are Helen Mirren, it's funny because I can tell you who the character is by the casting. Like, they don't even have to say Helen Mirren is playing Elizabeth. I know that she's not being cast to play Joyce. I'm sure she was cast to play Elizabeth. I don't even know. And again, this will mean nothing for those who haven't read the book. But the other two, the two male leads are Ben Kingsley, Gandhi himself, and 007 Pierce Brosnan. And I will say that on paper, like, while it's great that these older stars are able to play, you know, characters that are age and stuff like that, the only one on paper that I question is Pierce Brosnan. Because he's clearly going to play Ron, who is like a kind of a union heavy and all of this. And I know that stuff can be done with makeup and time, but there's nothing when I'm like, Ben Kingsley will play Ibrahim, and that makes perfect sense to me. In fact, when I was thinking of Ibrahim, I was thinking of a Ben Kingsley type. But Pierce Brosnan, man, I never, when I was reading about Ron Ritchie in the Thursday Murder Club series, was I thinking, you know, no offense, like, I love Pierce Brosnan, but he's very pretty, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can understand that for sure.
Like, if they said Hugh Grant was playing him, you know, I would be like, well, he's British, but I don't think that's a good fit, you know. But that said, I think Pierce Brosnan's a good actor. I guarantee that they'll make it work and stuff. I'm excited that that book series that Ryan and I keep talking about is going to be a movie. I'll say, you know what, this is going to be a bit mean, Ryan, but aside from the Netflix of it all, do you know what I think is kind of the bummer of this is actually Chris Columbus.
Okay.
Chris Columbus is a very safe director. And, you know, he's pretty faithful to the stuff that he adapts, but he doesn't take much in the way of adventurous risks, at least in the past. And, you know, when I see his name, I think to myself, that movie will probably be fine. You know, like it'll be good. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he did the first two Harry Potter movies and they're fine, but they're, mm-hmm. they're the least adventurous of the Harry Potter movies, you know? So I just think it's going to be, you know, again, they'll be good. It'll be good, but it won't be like, you know, exceptional. Not that it's just, it's an opportunity here to have a Knives Out style smash, I think, if done with some panache. I don't think this, the cast maybe, but the direction makes me wonder.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I when I saw Chris Columbus, I thought, okay, like that, as you said, safe is a good framing. But the other thing too is like being a Netflix film and being the first book, I think that you have a less action focused story, and it's really just a story that's gotta hit the beats, right? That first book is really about sort of the unraveling of the mystery, as opposed to the other books, which have a little more action. There's a little more stuff going on, you know. So I think if they start with Chris Columbus, whether it'll get additional films, who knows? But it was just kind of surprising to see the star power, and considering it is a Netflix film, and I know Netflix, you know, they're throwing a bunch of money at all kinds of stuff, but yeah. So they say they're going to start filming in July. I guess according to Osman, the author, he said that the actress that they're going to have play Joyce still in negotiations, but it is the person that the name is the one that he gets shouted about the most. So
what do you mean get shouted? Like that people know who it is already?
No, so I butchered the quote. He basically says, Joyce, we're still in negotiations, but again, the name is the one that people most shout at me in the street. So it's like a fan cast, and it's the most popular one.
It does feel like there's a fair amount of fan casting here. It's funny, I'm looking at the list of Chris Columbus's filmography, and he has not done that many movies, you know, like especially recently. And so will be interesting. And like, he did direct Home Alone, which is again, one of my favorites, The Goonies he directed, which is a childhood favorite of mine. There's a couple of in there that are, you know, that really hit with me personally, but recently in particular, it's being sort of, as the kids say, mid. I will say that the Netflix of it all kind of doesn't surprise me. It used to be like, it still is kind of like this way to get people out to theaters. It's got to be kind of a big special effectsy thing. It's got to be even the sequel to Knives Out was exclusive to streaming. I think they know that these murder mystery types, that, you know, especially the ones that are skewed towards an older audience will do well with at home. Anyway, now that we've alienated everybody who doesn't know what the Thursday Murder Club is, maybe we should go into that. What are some of the other things? We're going to talk about Fallout today, Ryan, the TV mm-hmm. show. We're going to talk about Prince of Persia, the video game. We're going to talk about some books you're reading that aren't these books.
Yeah, that's true.
Then we got our topic, which you mentioned earlier. I mean, like, this is a loaded show, Ryan, really.
It's a loaded show. How's that 7 p.m. coffee treating you? You doing good? You're still riding high?
I mean, like, I just got a little boost there. Like, it's just hitting me. It was more like an 8-10 p.m. coffee. Okay. It's just hitting me now. I assume I will crash before the end and everybody will feel it. But okay. For context to the listeners, I was up earlier than I normally get up this morning, and I've had a very loaded day, and so I am not my usual self.
This will not be a 2.5-hour powerhouse Dungeons and Diapers.
Stop saying that, so. Because then it will be. You're screwing us.
I was talking to Ashley about it.
And, see, look, you're doing it now. You're adding stuff. You know.
Okay. Well, just let me say.
No.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
No.
I was just gonna say.
No.
I was just gonna say that we've had longer episodes recently, and when I'm finished recording, I don't immediately think like, oh man, that was 2.5 hours. I'm always like, wow, that was 2.5 hours. Like, we're literally on the call for 3 hours. So it's a good thing. It really feels like it's not 2.5 hours. And I hope people appreciate the extra work that that goes into spending that amount of time with Crofton. So thank you, everybody.
He's a hero.
I am, really. Like, let's be honest. Okay, well, let's talk about something that Crofton and I have been watching. And we might as well capture that energy while you've got it. Let's talk about Fallout. You know, you've been watching that on Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I have. And you told me about it last time, and I was asking you a bunch of questions. Now, it's funny because there's 8 episodes, and I've watched them all, but you have not, which is funny to me. How many episodes are you in, just so I know? Not that we're going to do any spoilers here, really.
I think I'm 6 episodes in. I'm halfway through episode 6. So I'm kind of pacing myself. I'm
halfway through episode. I don't do half episodes, Ryan.
I have to. I always say, like, okay, after this scene, I'm gonna jump out. And it's because all the cliffhangers, obviously, this is gonna be obvious, but it's at the end of the episode. So if ended a scene halfway it's through, true. It doesn't feel as bad having to walk away.
No, that's true. That's smart, actually. I give you credit. Look, I'm just going to say it straight up, right off the top. This show rocks. I love it. And Jessie, my wife, watched all of it with me, and she also loved it. Now, this is the part where I tell everybody, and we mentioned it last time, Ryan mentioned it last time, it is gory. Is like, there are some scenes and the scenes are gratuitous. Like, the scenes are ones in which they could have made other choices to not be gross. They could have filmed it differently. They could have not showed certain things, but they just were like, no, we're going full gross. So it is like, you can, like, I'll tell Jess, I'm like, hide your eyes, don't look here or whatever. And she will. And then we get through it. But this is like true to the Fallout fiction, and the tones of this show are all over the place, but yet they coalesce into something that is so purely Fallout. And Ryan, you have not finished the last episode, but I will just say that the last episode in particular brings together everything in such a nice way. Like, I'm not saying that it closes everything and doesn't allow for more seasons. They've already been renewed. That's great. But it really, like, the thematic elements of Fallout, the characters' emotional journeys over the course of the season, they're all sort of paid out in that last episode. And so I can say that while aesthetically you start it, it looks and feels like Fallout. If you don't know what Fallout is, it's post-apocalyptic sort of Jetsons era sci-fi, like 1940s, 50s, with like a Mad Max apocalyptic wasteland, like these two flavors that seem to mesh strangely well together. I've been into the Fallout games for many years, and so I'm familiar with this, but to have it on the big screen so lavishly and so accurately recaptured and recreated is insane. And even in episode 7 and 8, like, and there are only 8 episodes, there would be Fallout elements, like things. They don't ram the fan service down your throat, but they'll see things, or there will be quotes or things that are so inherently Fallout that you're so surprised that they haven't happened or you haven't seen it before. A creature will come out and you're like, oh yeah, those creatures, I can't believe they held back on those until now, for instance. So yeah, just everything about the aesthetics is so good that then like that carries somebody like me that loves Fallout, but for Jess, what carries her is the characters and the story. And I asked Ryan last time, I said, like what sort of, like, Fallout, I don't associate Fallout with any good characters, and they've crafted characters here, and you know, the world is theirs to use. Perfectly recaptured the world of the video games, but the characters are created by them and they are great. So mostly. So I've been really enjoying it, Ryan. Like, I enjoyed it a lot, and we're like, oh, we both can't wait for the second season. We're both kind of bummed that it's over. But yeah, it's been, are you still, you're kind of like, I would say halfway through the sixth episode is probably, I don't remember episode to episode exactly, but would be the lowest, probably the least interest. It starts strong, it finishes strong. There's good stuff in the middle, but it's probably at its least interesting right now. So how are you finding it?
Well, I think the episode right now is kind of bouncing back and forth between the past and the present from the viewpoint of a vault. And that's where I'll kind of leave it. And I think that it is a quieter period because they are trying to find a specific thing. And then that specific thing is like taken off the playing board and whisked away. And it's like, okay, now what do we do? So like, there's some meandering, but it's not a huge distraction from the continuing lore. And I really like the past stuff. Like, I think out of all the Fallout games that I've played, like, the past isn't explored. Like, it's like maybe 5%, and that might be generous of the video game time of looking back. I remember. And it's from a gameplay perspective, too. Like, Fallout 4 starts with pre-war, but it's over very quick. And I think, is it Fallout 4 or 3 where you go into, like, the simulator and it kind of transports you back?
Yeah, 3. I was going to point that out if you didn't, and it's good you remembered.
Yeah, I remember it from one of them, and I'm glad you remember it's from 3. The reason it's taken me so long to get through it is I was trying to see if Ashley wanted to watch it with me. And I think by the time we got through halfway through 2, I was like, you know, she's on her phone. I'm like, hey, do you want to watch this or I'll watch it without you? It's not a big deal. And she's like, nah, it's not really my jam. And I'm like, that's fine. So I started to watch it without her. And then I was like, man, I really want to play Fallout 4. And I've kind of been jumping back and forth. So I'll like really enjoy the show and I'm like, okay, I want to play the game. I jump into the game and then like I'll be meandering between quests. I'm like, I'm not really feeling this now. Back to the show. So I've really just been like living Fallout through the game and the show and just jumping back and forth during my free time, like playing an hour of the game and then playing an hour of or watching an hour of the show. And as you said, like, when season 2 at best is going to arrive late 2025, maybe 2026, depending on how long it takes. It got a pretty quick renewal, but you know, they got to do scripting but they got all the actors now. They don't have to do like major casting, but I don't envision it. Like, if you look at The Last of Us as a barometer, like The Last of Us season 1 was early 2023.
Yeah,
we might get it late 2024.
I mean, my concern with this is like, I mean, you're probably not as concerned about something like this, but this has done blockbuster, gangbuster numbers for Amazon. And sure, there is zero reason why this couldn't be franchised out to hell like The Walking Dead, right? Like, they can't, there's no reason why, you know, they can't do Fallout season 2 and then Fallout New Vegas or Fallout whatever, you know, that they could do these spinoffs aligned with, and they probably have lore backing from the games and stuff with a whole other sets of characters. I'm worried about that. I know it's early to be worried about that, but it's done such bonkers success that I am concerned a little bit. I totally understand. Like, remember last time I was asking you, Ryan, I'm worried that this game is going to make me want to play a huge game. And you were like, well, you know, like, it kind of works both ways. And you're like, I also want to play Fallout, as does seemingly everyone based on the sales. It was interesting. I looked at my Steam playthrough. I've mentioned multiple times I bought this computer for Fallout 4 and it's due for an upgrade. But like, but I looked at how much time I've actually spent playing Fallout 4, because my memory of Fallout 4 was one where I was like, I played it, I started playing it, and I had a good time at the beginning. But then I was like, this is too much like Fallout 3. And there was already other games doing neater things, and I just dropped it without seeing too much of it. And sure enough, like I have 15 or 16 hours of playtime on Fallout 4. So I clearly have a lot more to see in that game. I've never played New Vegas. I played a lot of Fallout 3. Fallout 3 was the one that I was the most sort of into. So there is a lot of Fallout that's out there that I've just really never played or never gotten into. And so I am also very tempted to jump into this because I'm really like into the world right now. But just pivoting back to the show really quickly, a couple of things that I did want to gush on a bit is, first off, is Walton Goggins. Now, Walton Goggins is the actor that plays the ghoul. He is one of the three main protagonists. He's also in a lot of television shows. Notably for me personally, Justified, where he is the main antagonist, Boyd Crowder, slash anti-hero or whatever. And he was in The Shield as a main character before then. He's had some memorable cameo appearances, including on Community and other shows. And I love Walton Goggins. He is amazingly charismatic. This show, like, at one point I forgot I was looking at Boyd Crowder. I forgot, like, he was this other character, and I believed in this both in the past, because his arc takes place over two time periods. I was just really impressed by his performance all the time. Like, he's just charisma incarnate on screen without falling into like too much hokey tropes. I just like, I was all in on Walton Goggins. And I don't want to say the main lead of the show, but I guess it's kind of is true. I think her name is Ella Purnell, and she's Lucy, who is the vault person that goes out in the world, similar to the character you would play in a video game. She again, amazing, like just captures the whimsical, idealistic feel of this character who has grown up with these strong moral ideals thrust into a purely morally dubious plane of existence and forced to adapt. So great. Like, she's so great. And then there's the third guy and he's all right.
Yeah. I think Maximus is a bit, I don't know if it's his character specifically or if it's just his devotion to the Brotherhood that it's kind of funny because like Titus, I won't get into spoilers, but like Titus as a character is almost more animated, even though he's a Brotherhood of Steel. Whereas Maximus is probably what you would imagine. Like if you played enough Fallout 4 to get to like Paladin Dance, like Maximus is kind of like on that road to being this very straight faced, you know, like do it by the books type character. And he sways obviously throughout the show here and there. But yeah, it's put up against Ella Purnell and Walton Goggins. I always want to say Walter, but it's Walton Goggins, the ghoul and Lucy.
I won't accept any Walton Goggins heresy here, Ryan.
So I know. Don't. I love Walton Goggins too. Yeah. I mean, he is fantastic throughout this show. I know I haven't watched the whole thing, but
I will say, and this is not a spoiler, and I'm high off just seeing the last episode. So, but I will say the last episode of the show, the 8th of the 8th, is his best performance. Like terms of, he has a lot of great performances, but that's his best. And you know, he has a lot of meat in that one. The other thing is I would say about the show, Ryan, is that it has these, remember I said the different tones, but it actually also has like a mystery in it. And I think that that is what gripped my wife the most. My wife likes the mysteries. And there is a fourth protagonist, which is the brother of Lucy. And going back, she leaves the vault in the first episode. This is not a big spoiler. It's kind of in all the promotional material, but her brother stays behind. And so it occasionally goes back to her brother unraveling sort of mysteries there and stuff. And that was very like Lost vibes, like vibes from the TV show Lost, like the same sort of mystery exploration. And there's a lot of that that goes on throughout the show. And there are big reveals that come, and it is rewarding as a mystery box type show. And those mystery box shows are not always rewarding. Like at the end, you're not like, oh, okay, this is the reveal. That's what was in the hatch, you know. In this case, it's very well done. And he is a good actor as well. Like all the acting is top notch. And Ryan, I think what is so cool about the show really is the fact that they took a game in which the world is a fantastically developed and has a huge personality from the video games, but that really nobody cares about any of the characters. Like, whereas The Last of Us is just really this apocalyptic world that we've seen a zillion times before. But what makes the game so compelling is the relationship between these two characters, Ellie and Joel. And so they slavishly recreate that for the HBO show. They don't just do a Last of Us show with completely different characters, like doing different things. Whereas Fallout, they can just be like, we're going to use the world of Fallout, but we're going to just tell another complete other story. And nobody's upset about that because nobody is particularly attached to the overall story of any individual Fallout game. It's all about the side quest, the shenanigans, the world, all of that sort of stuff. So they have carte blanche to do sort of what they want here. And the audience, both the fanboys and fangirls and the vanilla audience, accept it for what it is. And so, like, if you ask me to make a list of my top five Fallout characters across all media of all time, you know, four of the five of them would for sure be from the TV show, and the fifth would be the dog.
Yeah. No, and it's kind of interesting because, like, I playing the Fallout game, you mentioned the dog. The dog, I don't want to be reductive here, but the dog in Fallout 4 is just a well-programmed dog. Like, he's a good boy, don't get me wrong, but, like, he's not really...
No.
I know
what you're saying. Yeah. There's nothing to him. He's just a companion. Fallout is like a solo game where you might have a companion character, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And he can be that character. No, I get it. It's about, you know, having these encounters, and the show captures that as well. Anyway, I will just say that from my point of view, this is a show that would appeal to most everyone except for one major thing. Oh. Which is the gore. Like, that is the thing. That is the, like, I think that if you're open to sci-fi, if you're open to, you know, some people just are like, no sci-fi, this has got mystery, it's got atmosphere, it's got character, it's got great actors. It's like, if you like sci-fi shows, this is a great sci-fi show, much less a great video, like, it's a great video game show too, but, like, you don't need to know anything about the video game. You could just play this, watch this like my wife did, and just like really, really enjoy it for what it is. The problem is that it has in each episode one, if not more, gratuitous scenes of gore. Now, the scenes, I think, pass very quickly. Like they show it to really show it, but then you can just, if they kind of foreshadow when something gory is going to happen, like you get a sense, you know, somebody's limping and he's about to take off his boot and you're like, oh, okay, I probably shouldn't look here, you know, and you turn your head before he reveals the extent of his injury. And then you look back, you know, you look back a few seconds later and it's all resolved and you can keep going with the story. It's not like a gory movie that is just continuously in gore. But that said, gore is in this show and it makes it difficult to recommend to people that might be queasy about that stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny, playing the game, the gore is very front and center. And I'd almost say that the show has less of it in comparison to the game, because the game... And I can already picture, like, when they do get around to a Fallout 5, there will be a switch that basically turns off the gore, because it is very... You have an option, obviously, to pick a perk that makes it more present. Like, anytime you shoot something, they just explode. But, like, when you play Fallout 4 or whatever, every shot you take, like, the limbs and the body and the head all have different target mechanics. And if you do enough damage to a limb... That limb, depending on the character, will fall off. Like, if you're fighting a ghoul or you kill a character by shooting them in the arm, their arm just explodes off and they die. Like, there's a lot of gore
Right.
In the video
But it's game. Also a video game so that you can choose to go on these quests and engage in combat, or you can try to steer clear of combat. Like, you know, whereas in a video game, you're just going to be like, I don't give a shit. I'm going to go in and attack all these people and take their stuff and whatever. Like, it's less impactful than in a TV show. So I do get what you mean. It's not regular to the extent that it is in video games. Also, like, you know, even Fallout 4, the most recent of the single player Fallouts, graphics, I you know, I don't know about the new update, but it Bethesda graphics occupy this thing where they go for scope over quality for the most part, so that it's fairly large world. The graphics are good, but they're not, like, you know, photorealistic. So when you're blowing off the leg of, like, someone, it is kind of like you know, it is cartoony, and the show adopts kind of a cartoony tone with some of this stuff, but it's still, like, you know, real gore. So I mean, it particularly looks nasty. So anyway, it's just I know we talked about it last time, and you're like, you know, it's pretty heavy in the first episode and then it kind of eases up a bit.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. I think every single episode they like to have at least one or two scenes of, like, big time gore and like just disturbing thing. And what they do is there's not going to be something that happens so suddenly and gory that you don't, you know, like in a movie or somebody might, their head might just explode and it's to shock the audience. This show doesn't do that. You know when gore, you pretty much know when gore is going to happen for the most part,
yeah,
and are able to then to turn away.
You can see it coming.
Yeah. You can see it coming almost every time. And I would just say that, that you know, if you're like, wow, this show sounds good, but I put off by the gore, then there is that sort of light. Watch it with somebody who is not as put up by the gore and let them be your censor to say when to look. That's how my wife and I did it. Can I look now? I'm like, no, just wait a sec. Okay, now you're good.
Yeah, he's still shaking the bits off his hand. Just wait.
There was one scene where he takes off a boot recently where it's just like, it went on. Like, I'm like, okay, oh, no. And I feel so bad when I'm wrong, because she'll put her hand down for a second and then be like, oh, gross. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm like, I thought they were cutting here, you know? But yeah.
The scene specifically for me that was like, Ashley didn't get this far, but I think there's an episode or a scene in episode 3 with the power armor that probably would have been like, what's this show? I'm not watching it anymore. But again, that moment is forecast and they don't linger on it. Like, it's like they creep up to it. They show it. It's over. But it's still there. So, like, I can understand if you are squeamish around that stuff. Like, as Crofton said, like, you know, given warning, you can kind of look away. But it's not. I guess what I was saying is, like, I think the first episode gives you an idea of the pacing of when they showcase that gore. But I mean, unless the last two episodes are just like a gore fest, I feel like it's spread out enough that you're not like having to look away every 10 minutes. You know, it's fairly spread out, and I think it earns it when they use it. And it is a direct callback to the video game, because, as I said, it's, the video game is pretty gory. I was working my way through what I guess, yeah, you would call a dungeon. And it's like, man, just senselessly, like, just seeing all these body parts flying all over. I'm like, I forgot how gory the video game was. And my characters are just like, well, it's a shame it had to come to that, but you're really good at this. And I'm like, yeah, I just stepped out of the vault.
Just out of curiosity here, Ryan, I know you'll talk about this more. Do you, how are you enjoying the game, and do you think you're going to stick with it? Would you, is it like, have you gotten it out of your system and you're like, well, you know, this is dated and I'm good now? Or, like, how are you feeling about it right now?
Yeah, so I'm playing Fallout 4. I've got the high resolution texture pack installed, which is like from Bethesda, and then it's got the patch. And I have the season pass. I guess, like, going into it, I knew, like, I am not going to finish this, you know? I looked at where I left off. Like you, I didn't finish it when it came out either. I had 50 hours into it when it launched. I got to the Institute. And, like going back to it, I was like, okay, I'm not going to finish this. But I think my goal is kind of like maybe to try to get to the first piece of DLC, because I never did any of the DLC. So I'm going to try to get to the first piece of story DLC, which I think was the Automatron. But it was kind of slow going. Like the first few hours, you know, it's kind of meandering. It is an open world game. And the story starts out like, you know, your son's been kidnapped and you now are woken up into this world after being frozen. And you're like, well, where's my son? And then it's kind of like, you know, you're kind of left like, well, where do I go to find my son? Well, you should go to the big city. You go to the big city, and then suddenly you're like bombarded with, you know, people asking for help, and you meet the Minutemen, you meet Paladin Dance, you meet a bunch of other people, and it's like, I just want to find my son. So after being
sounds
distracted
like Lucy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, it's the wastelands.
Just want to save my dad.
The wastelands a distracting place, I guess. Or what's the line that Walton Goggins said? My favorite.
Thou will be distracted by bullshit every time.
Yeah, exactly. It was perfect. I love that.
But like the game, in terms of like the minute to minute, like playing it and exploring and doing stuff, does it feel like? I guess you put in a sizable amount of time, like the 50 hours before you. So it's really revisiting something that you previously know and such. So you feel like you're mentally committed to checking out before the end. But you're still playing it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think it's to scratch that itch, really. And it's not, I highly, highly doubt I'm going to, let's be honest, I am not going to finish this game.
No, I know, but you could have said that about any video game. When I guess how's Final Fantasy 16 going? Da-doom, doom.
I haven't started yet.
No, I know. So the one thing I do remember about Fallout 4 specifically is that there was a building, a base building or something mechanic.
Yes, the settlement system, yep.
I remember really like being like, oh, I don't need this. I remember that was like you know, from Fallout 3, because Fallout 3, you know, you're walking around, you do get, you know, bases and stuff. But Fallout 3, like the more I keep talking about, the more I feel like I should just like get it, like start with Fallout 3 is the one that I have the nostalgia for now. Like I played it on Xbox 360. That's the version I have. So I don't even think I have that one on PC, to be honest. But maybe that's the one I should start with and then try New Vegas is the one everyone raves about and that I've not yet played. I feel, though, that if I start with Fallout 4, which is obviously a newer game and more mechanically advanced than, say, New Vegas, and then I tried to go back to New Vegas afterwards, I'd be like, oh, I should have done it the other way around. You know? So I may try to figure that out. Oh, you're not playing it on Steam Deck, though, I take it.
No, I'm playing it on the PC, although it is Steam Deck verified. So my suggestion for folks who are playing or watching the show and want to get back into the games, my suggestion is to start with Fallout 4 because it is the one that got the recent patch. It is working on current hardware. You're not going to have to install a bunch of mods to get it working just so. I think the further you go back, unless you have, I don't even know if the 360 copy is compatible with your, like if it has backwards compatibility. My recommendation is to go Path of Least Resistance, especially if you are just trying to scratch that itch of watching the show. New Vegas is probably a similar boat where, you know, you are going to have to install some mods to get it to a point where you're going to be satisfied. Fallout 4 is likely the quickest and easiest path. But if you are looking to go down the Fallout 3 or New Vegas route, like definitely look into it and make sure it's compatible with your current hardware. But I can confirm that Fallout 4 runs really well on PC now. I mean, it still has its Bethesda jank, but you know, I've had some crashes. I've had some incredibly long load times on occasion.
To be fair, it's only been 10 years.
I mean, yeah, I know. Like, what can be done, right? They've been busy with. I was trying to think, like, what was Bethesda's last game before Starfield? It was Fallout 4, right? It was like almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, I think when video game development, when they talk about for video game development, like just the unsustainability of it, the fact that studios are getting closed, the fact that people are getting fired, and the fact that games just seem increasingly impossible to make. When Fallout 3 came out, I could be wrong about this, but I think Fallout Vegas came out, if not the next year, then the year after that. Like, it was very close. Yes, it was another studio, but this is how things could be done back then. Nowadays, it's just not possible. The games, making games is such an arduous and complicated endeavor that, you know, like when they said there's no new Fallout game to come out with the show, it's not just that there's no new Fallout game. It's that like the Bethesda pipeline is they go Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Fallout, Elder Scrolls. And now they have a new IP that took them 10 years to do. And so it's now what, Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Starfields. And so their next up is, I think, Elder Scrolls. And so then at this juncture, the next Fallout game would be in 20 years from now, right? Like if they're doing 10 years a game. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily going to be the case or whatever, but that's where we're at. Like where they took that this long, and why people are, I think, not, I haven't played Starfield, so I can't judge, but people were upset a little bit about Starfield, and I think it's just because of – it's the same with Suicide Squad and Rocksteady. The idea that this studio, this beloved studio that makes these quality games that you grew up enjoying or you ended up playing and left a big mark on you, has spent X amount of their time doing this thing, and it's not as great as that you would have wanted it to be, right? And so I think that my hope – is that they're like back to, they might even make a hard pivot and be like, Jesus, we got to get some Fallout out before this show is done. You know, let's say they do four seasons of the show or something. Then maybe they're like, well, for the last season, we can get a game out. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, but maybe.
There was a rumor from some Xbox leaks that Fallout 3 Remaster was on their list. So I think if you were looking for like,
oh, an nice,
easy sort of layup to have alongside season two, that might be what they do, is they have the Fallout 3 remaster. That would be the smart thing to do. Cause again, like Fallout 4 was recent enough where a patch was sufficient to kind of get it up and running again. Fallout 3 might be a larger task. And we all know we love to spend an additional $80 on Bethesda games.
Well, so. I think it would have to really be something like, you know, not a remake is something entirely, but I think they would really have to pump it up a lot, not just up the textures and up the, like, I think it'd be like porting it almost entirely into the Fallout 4 at least engine or something like that. I'm not sure what it would entail, but for them to sell it, like, I think if they were just putting a fresh coat of paint and saying, hey, we're gonna up-res this, we're gonna make it look a little bit sharper, we're gonna give you all the DLC. I think they would need to pair it with New Vegas and all the DLC for that as well, and call it like the Fallout Ultimate something or whatever, and sure, and release those two games. Cause I think a Fallout 3 remaster by itself, especially when Fallout 4 is out there, it would have to be something special.
Yeah. Well, there is, I mean, they're all under the same umbrella. Not that they need Obsidian's permission to release New Vegas again,
because
right, it is Bethesda's IP, but they're all in the same house. So they can have that discussion.
The last thing I'd say about this is one thing I'm curious, Ryan, because I'm sure this happened for The Last of Us as well, but I noticed it for Fallout, which is that the legacy catalog of Fallout games is selling gangbusters on Steam. Not only that, like the amount of consecutive players playing, like it's just insane how much this has rejuvenated interest in a franchise that's been out for many years. And I'm assuming when The Last of Us came out, probably the sales of The Last of Us games did really well, and people were playing The Last of Us games as well. I think that Bethesda, this is not just for this, but like for the Elder Scrolls, for other things, this is a license to print money, because essentially they are getting paid to use their IP. And like every episode of Fallout starts with the Bethesda Game Studio logo in the same way that a video game would. And they don't even call it Bethesda TV Studios or whatever they call it. They still call it Bethesda Game Studios. And I'm like, this is crazy seeing this logo and then going into a TV show. But they're getting paid for licensing Fallout. And then Fallout's a huge success as a TV show, and then everybody buys their games. And then they make a ton of money on the sale of their games. Games that came out years ago and had budgets and were measured at certain times, you know, like maybe Fallout 4 was considered, like Fallout 76 was notably considered a failure. Is it still a failure? You know, like so many people have bought it recently. It's probably made a shit ton of money. A lot of people are playing it now. Is it like financially, if they look back at it, they're like, oh man, that was a... That actually ended up being big, but they only found out years and years later. I just think video game studios video game companies would be dumb not to consider how their product could be adapted into a game, into a TV show or a movie rather, because that could potentially lead to Ryan buying the entire Sonic collection, you know? I just think that it's a gateway to making a ton more money. And that's why recently, like in the Avendad's chat and other things, I've been getting on video games for having the stupidest names of any medium. And I do think that game companies really have to start considering and taking themselves more seriously. If they want their shows to be their games to be adapted into shows, into movies, they need to have titles that are not like Honky Donk Scar Rail, you know, like they've got to be names that are going to pull in a more general audience, that are going to allow them to do a more prestige show, because it's just going to lead to massive money. They'll get paid out front, and then they'll get paid out through sales of their games that have been out for years. So anyway,
yeah,
that's my thoughts.
Well, I look forward to the, what do you call it? The Honky Donk Star Rail anime movie that we'll watch on the show, and we'll talk about it for episodes to come.
The worst part is that we'll probably, as soon as you said anime, I'm like, oh, for sure that's what it'll be. And then
it's already an anime.
And then you'll watch it, and then you'll be like, hey, my thing today is Honky Donk Star Rail anime, and I'll be like, oh god. But anyway,
no,
but you have other stuff, Ryan.
I do today. Have other stuff. Yeah, no anime, although one could maybe argue that a character we might touch on later on before we move to the topic is a bit anime-ish, but we'll get to that. As promised last episode, I finished reading The Three-Body Problem, which is a book from China that's been translated. The whole series has been translated over here. It's been out for a while, although renewed interest due to the fact that there is a Netflix adaptation out right now from the Game of Thrones co-creators of the HBO series. And I don't normally do this, but when I was having conversations with folks, like they had push me towards reading the book before watching the show. Usually I don't care. Like usually I'm like, well, if there's a show, that's my preferred medium. But like a lot of people are telling me like, no, you got to read the book. It is, it's heavy. It's a slow burn. It kind of like, you know how I always say, like I have like these two tenets when it comes to reading books, it's gotta be a fun story. It's gotta have an interesting hook, you know, and it's gotta be humorous, you know, it's gotta have a sense of humor. The Three-Body Problem only has the hook. It is not humorous. It is not a fun ride, if you will. Like it is very, it's very dry and it's very scientific. Like the things that it goes into in such detail is, it's bananas. Like it's just, there's a lot to this. And it also explores like the history of China as well with the Cultural Revolution and all that. So like that was kind of the angle for me that kind of hooked me at the beginning, was like, I don't know a lot about the history of China. So to sort of have that stuff explained from, you know, from that perspective, like, it was very interesting. I was learning a lot there too, as well as like exploring this very science fiction book. So like the premise is that in the present, scientists are committing suicide. They're dying. Essentially, science is dying, is how they frame it. And there's this mysterious video game called The Three-Body Problem, I think it's called Three-Body. And it is also this mysterious thing that's present throughout the story that is impacting some of these scientists. And essentially what's happening, and I'm not going to spoil it, because again, like, the book is a very slow burn. The Netflix show, I've only watched one episode, and I'm going to watch the rest of it and talk about it maybe next episode. But after finishing the book, I was like, okay, that was a lot. I am not going to go rush and watch the series. I am most definitely not going to go and pick up the second book right away, because it is a dense novel, but it is the equivalent of, like, you got to play the first 20 hours of a video game until it gets good. The last 100 pages just melted away as things started to pick up. And again, to say anything would spoil the premise of it. And if you do watch the Netflix series or even watch the trailer, it spoils those moments and kind of like ruins the first, not ruins, but like, it spoils the first 300 pages of the book, which is the slow burn. And I think it's more in the book, like, because it's a slower burn, once you get to that last 100 pages, you're like, oh shit, you know, it's very, it hits hard. I'm sure it hits hard in the show as well, but like, it's 8 episodes as opposed to, you know, 400 pages of
course, yeah,
translated Chinese, right? Like, so.
Hey, Ryan.
Yeah.
I bet What's I know that? What the sequel to The Three-Body Problem is called.
What is it called? Yeah, it's probably not what you're gonna say. Yeah.
I bet it's called The Dark Forest.
Oh, yeah, it is actually.
Huh? See, I knew it.
I thought you were going to make a joke.
You thought I was going to say the four-body problem, didn't you? I thought
it was a bit, you know?
You thought I was going to say, but I just looked it up. Yeah, no. That's where they – hey, you know what? The Dark Forest is where they buried the three bodies.
Well, it's interesting because, like, the three-body problem is not that. It is something different. And I didn't realize, like, it was a real mathematical, theoretical thing at least I assume it is. Again, the book, like, goes into such detail that, like, anything they're talking to me about, like, yeah, that makes
sense. I am honestly impressed that you read this book. Everything you say about it makes me less interested in wanting to read this book.
You should watch the series then.
You said like math. You've said, yep. science. Dense. You made a list of the top three things that you like in books and then said this has almost none of them. And that, like, you've just essentially, but yet you finished this book. So, like, to me, it says that there's something about, like, you know, and I get that you said the history of China and all that was like your gateway into this thing. But then the last 100 pages, like, I feel like this is the type of book I personally should read and be the person that's talking about, but I guess I'm I give you credit. I'm too much of a wuss, I guess.
I like, it's this science fiction. So it kind of starts off as this like historical look at, you know, it deals with the 60s and the 70s, you know, in China. And then it also interweaves with present day stories about what's happening to these scientists. And like, the science fiction stuff is less present in the past and very present in the future. But really, you don't know what's going on, but you get this.
That tends to be this thing with science fiction. It tends to be more present in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good one. Yeah, I see what I did there. But like,
it's not present in the past very much. No, sorry, Ryan.
It's okay. No, very valid. Isn't the English language amazing? And I think that's why, like, it's so cool that they, like, again, like, I know this book has been, you know, praised for how well of a translation it's done, and it's no easy feat to take something from, you know, another country and translate it in such a way that that kind of brings the concept and the story forward without losing. And I think that, again, as you go forward, you do get the sense that there is this impending doom. You just don't know sort of what it is and until it starts to sort of unravel and you know, you realize like what's going on. But again, if you watch even the trailer for the Netflix show, it kind of like removes that element pretty quick. So if you are interested, I think like I've watched one episode of the Netflix show. It has that mystery. It gets going much quicker. It still explores like the past and the present while still having that sort of impending doom that is very present in the novel. It's just a slower burn in the novel. And there's like more going on in the book, which, you know, shouldn't surprise anyone, but it's like I've watched one episode of the show. My struggle with the show, it's similar to Fallout and why I've kind of been slow to pick up on it is it hasn't been renewed yet. And I just can't anymore. Like I just can't get into a show or a movie where I don't know if it's going to keep going. I think that's where like I really enjoy the Marvel stuff because that's a machine and it's going to keep going. You know, even if a movie tanks, like those characters might not get a sequel. Like we're not going to get an Eternals 2, but like the Eternals will return, you know, at some point. Will they? I mean, like they'll be in the background. They'll be waving, you know, when they have their next portal fight. But like, that's my struggle with especially Netflix is like, okay, you have the co-creators of Game of Thrones and say what you will about them. I know they botched the finale of that series, but adapting really good material, they made some solid television. And I think what they've got here with the Netflix series is a solid adaptation. And just the way they adapt, especially in that first episode, the way they adapt like the countdowns that some of the characters are seeing, like, and that's sort of leading to the impending doom and science dying. Like they showcase it like really well in the show. And I just struggle. Like this is probably the most expensive show. It's always the most expensive show Netflix done. And it's like,
I understand the idea of not wanting to get invested in the show, but if you're reading the books first and foremost, then even like, I remember like Jesse was really into these Philip Pullman books and they which they've now have a TV series going, his Dark Materials series. But they were doing movies with Nicole Kidman and I think Daniel Craig. They did The Golden Compass was the first one. And then they never did any of the others in this trilogy or what have you. And you know, she was a bit frustrated about it, but she's like, in the end, I got the books, right? So it's like, you know, you can read the Three-Body Problem, the Dark Forest, and the Five-Body Problem, and the Darker Forest, and all of the books in the series. For me, it's just like, I know you don't want to spoil anything. And like, you've talked vaguely about some of the elements and like how the three bodies are not what I think. And this and that science, math, blah, blah, blah. I still find myself like, I don't really know what this is about, right? Like at the core, what it's about. And I know that you probably like a sizable amount of twist. That's the thing. Obama likes this. Ryan likes this. You're two of the people I respect the most. Oh. And so, you know, like I should probably look at it.
Yeah. I'll say this, like from a science fiction perspective, them aliens, you know, like that's essentially like where this leads to. And it is established fairly early on in the book. And again, in the Netflix show, like it is also.
It's an alien show?
Yeah. The aliens are, I don't want to say present because they're in the future. That'll make sense if you watch it.
No, I get it. I know how time works. I'm looking. Yeah. I'm looking at the most expensive Netflix shows, but I don't think this is still accurate. Stranger Things is so yeah. very high.
Yeah,
you know, $30 million an episode or something. But And Fallout was probably super expensive as well, but they definitely made their money back, or made it. It was worth it for them, I'm sure. Because one thing too, Ryan, is like, if your show comes back, the three body problem, and they're just like, okay, we're going to renew it, but we're going to cut its budget. You know,
right?
That's another way of like, oh yeah, you get it, but then all of a sudden there's some notable, you know, notable changes or what have you. I'm not sure which is worse. I guess not having it at all is worse, but at least with Fallout, I know that if anything, their budget will get bigger. So my issue there will be like, maybe too big, and they'll be like Fallout Show 2 and Fallout Show 3, you know?
Yeah.
But, I think it was the second most... I know it's the second most watched show after the Lord of the Rings show on Amazon, but it might be the second most expensive as well. So it's interesting to think about the finances of those shows, because it just directly impacts your problem of like, will it get another season?
Yeah.
Anyway, I, for one, am glad this book talk turned into TV shows.
Yeah, well, let's keep on the trend here, and we'll do this quickly, because this is going to be another one of those Crofton... you're going to watch this, and then next episode we'll talk about it again. So okay. Conan O'Brien Must Go. It's on Crave. I listened to the Conan O'Brien podcast, The Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I find it hilarious. I've never been like a late night television person. I don't think I've seen any of Conan O'Brien's late night stuff, but that's not his fault.
That's so crazy to me.
I haven't seen any late night show stuff. I can't stand it.
Contextually, I was like, when I was living in Montreal, and I worked a night job, like I was working, I was at Ubisoft at the time, and I was working nights, and I would, you know, like I would watch late night, I would watch Conan, especially on my days off. Like he had his, what was the show that I now Seth Meyers has it. And then Jimmy Fallon had in between, which is like late night after the, you know, Tonight Show and stuff. So it started at like, I think it went 12:30 to 1:30 or something. Like it was very late, but it allowed him a platform to do this outrageous stuff and to cast these character actors and do these bits. And I remember like then he would have guests afterwards, and the guest part is always the lamest part, but sometimes Conan and his sidekick Andy, and they would just make it so great. And then, of course, you know, there's countless stories afterwards, him going to the Tonight Show, having it taken from him, him getting another show with TBS. But I have watched a lot of Conan moments and goofs. In fact, he had a moment promoting the show that you're talking about on Hot Ones, that wing eating show. And it's funny because I watched it, and everybody's going on about it. Oh, it's so funny. This is such the best Hot Ones ever. And I watched it and I was like, it is funny because Conan is funny, but that could have been a bit on any of his late night shows anytime. Like he's done countless of these. And it's just, I guess it got such attention because Hot Ones is normally lame and he made it good, I guess. But yeah, he's just like, gifted in terms of like being quick-witted, comedic, timing, all of that sort of stuff. Amazing. So I have been, and he loves the travel stuff and the doing the on-site. So I'm really curious to hear if this show is all killer, no filler.
It's definitely all killer, no filler. There are only four episodes. They're very tight. And don't let the fact that it ties, you know, directly with his podcast. So basically on his podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, he also does like fan segments, and the sort of driving factor for visiting these four countries, I was just going to pull up the episodes there. They go to Norway, Thailand and Ireland and one more. Oh, Argentina. And throughout the season, they are visiting, he's visiting fans. He's surprising fans that he talked to on the podcast. And it's kind of funny because on the podcast, he says like, well, this is so interesting. Like if I'm ever in Argentina, I will come see you. And
yeah,
you know, kind of sounds like a flat thing to say, but now that he's done this show,
yeah,
it's like, oh, well, you know, he actually did it. And I don't know. It's just, it is like, I don't usually watch travel shows. I don't usually watch late night, but like this travel show is really cool. He is hilarious. Like he has those bits that he does, and he's constantly doing bits. And I know Ashley, if she were watching with me, she's like, this is the silliest thing I've ever seen. Like there's a point where he's in Norway and he's like, he's joking that like everywhere you go to eat, they serve you cod. They're so obsessed with yeah. cod. And there's a bit where he's like, I want to bring some souvenirs home for the family. And he's just at like a cod farm and he's like stuffing a travel bag, like a suitcase, like a hard suitcase filled with cod. And that's the bit, is just him struggling yeah. with this vendor to fill his suitcase with fish. And it gives you sort of, that scene on its own just gives you the idea of like what you're in for, you know.
Yeah.
And it is it was so good, hilarious, heartwarming as he's meeting these fans.
Yes, they must be excited to see him.
Oh, so excited. And he is such a goofball, and it's like my kind of humor, like just he's goofy but he's not, and he's self-referential, and he can, obviously it's a travel show, I'm sure there is a lot of stuff where he's like talking to strangers that didn't, you know, work, and they don't include that in the show. They include only the good stuff, right? Or the stuff that's funny. So I realize it's edited down, but it is really good. And I mean, if you're a fan of Conan O'Brien, you likely already knew of this show, but if you are a fan, like definitely don't skip out on this one, even though it is like exclusive, at least here in Canada, to one of the least subscribed to premium subscriptions. But it's totally worth for the, like, if you can subscribe for the month, it's worth the $20. It is that, to me, it was that good. Like I really,
oh wow, that's really a, that's it. High praise.
Yeah, you'll love, I know you'll love it. I mean, I sent you the Hot Ones clip because I watched it today, because I don't watch Hot Ones, but he was talking about it on the podcast. So I was like, oh, I'll check it out. And I watched it and I'm like, like to a T, like that is exactly like how he is on the show. He finds something and he just like drills into it. Like, and it's just,
well, one thing about Conan is that his appearance on Hot Ones led to him getting an outpouring of affection online and stuff. And, you know, some people were thinking that he had died or something because, you know, he was trending and all of this. It's just funny because the same thing kind of happened to Martin Short about 6 months ago or so, where Martin Short, I think somebody said Martin Short was not funny or something of that nature, and in the entire world and internet rallied around Martin Short, and he got treated in a way as if he had just passed, and everybody was sharing their favorite Martin Short moments, and everybody was doing that, and they did that for Conan recently, and I was so happy for him, because the thing is that having followed his career, this guy is just a genuinely nice guy, and he has elevated so many other people. Like his podcast that he does is with like his assistant Sonam Mousafian and Matt Gourley, this person who worked with him, Aaron Blair, who was like his IT guy. He started doing the Clueless Gamer segments. He's got, you know, like he just, everybody who worked with him on Hot Ones, when he was talking about like his first late night show, he remembers the name of the camera operator, and it's not the same camera. Like he hasn't had that same camera operator the whole time, but he remembered, like he just is a nice guy. Everybody seems to agree in the comedy world, and it's nice to see nice things happen to nice people. They say never meet your heroes, but it sounds like a lot of these people did. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one, Ryan.
Yeah, no, you'll enjoy it, and we will talk more about it, because I think it is really good. So definitely look into that. Let us move into the diapers with our topic. This is where we talk about a specific topic, usually related to our kids or our family, and this time is no different. We're going to be talking about advertising and our kids and where they might see advertising. You know, we talked about streaming services just in our past segment. Some of the streaming services, depending on how you pay for them, don't have ads. or sorry, do have ads, and some don't as well, I suppose. But like Fallout, obviously you're not watching Fallout with your kids, but Fallout on Prime has ads at the start. Depending on how you pay for Crave, there may or may not be ads. But yeah, so advertising, obviously, and it's how it's changed. Like for us, obviously watching TV as kids, Saturday morning cartoons, the show and the commercials were all advertisements, you know, and we still see that today with like the Paw Patrols of the world and any kids show for that matter. But Paw Patrol comes to mind as like the biggest culprit when it comes to like, we need a new season. What are we introducing? I don't know, cats or dragons, you know, this is the dragon season. Now everybody has dragon suits. You know, and you think I'm joking, but I'm not. Like, they did a dragon season. I remember we talked about the dinosaur season, which was like, literally, like, how do we sell dinosaurs? Like, well, you know, you put it in the show, and then you make a bunch of shitty toys. So, I guess I'll start with you, Crofton. Like, in terms of your kids, like, what kind of advertising are they subjected to? And like, from a traditional sense or from an embedded sense, like, what? What are they seeing? Like, can you go over that a little bit?
For a long time, nothing. Like, because for a long time, like streaming services, you mentioned ads. That's only recently started. You know, it's not in the ones that they really see right now. We don't have ad tier platforms. So they're not getting any advertisements there. Ryan, you did a good job of like sort of sharing the fact that we had ads up the wazoo as kids, right? Like we had the TV shows themselves were made by toy companies. Every ad in it was for a product. Like we were seeing them regularly and nobody saw anything wrong with that. That was like capitalism 101, get them while they're young, right? Whereas now parents in particular, we have a much more insight into how the brain develops and stuff. And we don't want necessarily people to be, really into our kids to be into advertisement. You realize that advertisement exists in different ways though that you don't think of. I know for me, like just driving around, I live in an urban area, you know, is it billboards that they see? Is it, you know, like even the signs for stores that you, but like there's a billboard on the main drag near my house that has like sometimes ads for Dairy Queen or McDonald's, and my kids have seen stuff on that billboard and be like, oh, we gotta go, they have a new confetti cone at Dairy Queen, you know. And so like advertising is absolutely everywhere, and so I can't say that I've locked my kids in pneumatic tubes and like stopped them from being exposed to advertisement, but I have been lucky in the sense that up until recently they haven't been too involved in advertising or seen much. That said, that has changed recently. But before talking about how it's changed and why it's changed, Ryan, how about you? How much have your kids been involved with advertisement?
Yeah. I mean, first I'll say this, like, not to give credit to the move for streaming services to start introducing ads, but to give them at least some credit, we pay for the Netflix ad. It's the ad supported Netflix plan because we don't watch it. Ashley and I, we don't watch a lot of Netflix, but the kids watch it, but the ads don't play on kids' profiles. So like at least, so like we save $10 a month by going with the ad supported one, but the kids don't see the ads because they don't play ads on kids' programming. And it's part of their policy. That will likely change once they get like a solid amount of like kids advertising targeting kids. Like we obviously had ads growing up, you know, during our programming. So I would imagine eventually Netflix is going to start introducing ads. And when they do, like, we'll obviously probably up the plan again to get rid of it for the kids. Cause obviously we don't want the kids to see a bunch of ads, but, And same with Amazon. Like Amazon, if you have a kid's profile, it will not show ads on that stuff. So that's good. But for my kids, like where they usually see ads, and I was actually surprised because the kids would say like, oh yeah, I saw an ad for that. I'm like, where did you see an ad for that? And it was at school. They use, in the classrooms, they use YouTube a lot. for their programming, for like activities and dancing and stuff, and ads will play on those videos. So sometimes they'll see ads, and I'm assuming the teachers just won't, you know, they don't skip the ads if they are appropriate, or they don't, you know, turn off the screen.
It's too bad, because you can have a paid account. Like we bought the for Jesse's dad this thing so that he doesn't see ads on YouTube, right? Like,
yes,
you could have that, but they probably have, you know, the teachers are just like, we're just going to look this up on YouTube, and oh look, there's a video for JavX before.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, like anytime, I know teachers, like they do not have additional resources for that stuff. So like, unless they're paying for YouTube Premium with a personal and running a personal account in the classroom, like, you know, I don't blame them for not having it if it's not something they need in their own, you know, their own lives. But yeah, I guess they would see ads, on YouTube at school, movies, you know, going to the movies, trailers, like those are ads for other kids' movies. So if you're going to see like the latest, you know, Illumination film, you're getting a bunch of trailers for other, you know, cartoons. But I think because my kids see so little of advertising and don't understand that some of the shows they're watching are just basically long advertisements, like they don't watch Paw Patrol anymore, but I guess like Abby watches a lot of Bluey, and Bluey's not too bad, but like there are toys associated with Bluey, but like she doesn't say, oh, you know, we want to go buy the Wheeler house or the Healer house or whatever. And like, so there is that disconnect where I'm sure they are seeing ads, but it doesn't translate to like, oh, I got to have this thing because it's the new hotness, you know, like they don't really make those connections.
No. And my kids don't, like, until they're in the toy aisle, they're not even sure that a toy exists or is. Oh, and like, I would like to draw a line between shows like Bluey that are not, that sell toys, but are not designed to be toys, as opposed to shows that are designed to be toys. Because like, you know, Spider-Man was a comic book, and there are tons of Spider-Man comics, and there's tons of Spider-Man action figures, obviously, but the show is not, Spider-Man is not created as to be a toy selling thing, you know, where Bluey wasn't created necessarily to sell toys. It was created to be a show about a family or whatever. Like that's the difference I would make as opposed to Paw Patrol, which is definitely just created by Spin Master, a huge toy company, to sell toys, right? But the YouTube thing is a big thing, because I remember we made a choice early on to not let our kids use YouTube for that very reason. Not just that reason. There's the Wild West of the internet, even the YouTube kids. But there was, the ads was a big thing. So like, I know YouTube is a big place where people see ads. For us, the thing that has changed is that we have tablets in the house now. They're kids' tablets, mostly like Amazon Fire, and they use them to watch their shows. They pretty much don't watch shows on TV. They just watch them on their tablets. They're all watching Alvin and the Chipmunks right now, which I think is very funny, because that's literally what I watched when I was their age, although a different version of Alvin and the Chipmunks. Same theme song, whatever. But like the thing is, the tablets have opened the door to ads. Gwen in particular has gotten into like games. And there are games that have like really aggressive advertisement in them. Like these like tablet games, Ryan, like I had not been really exposed to them. She got this one called Wordscapes. Now Wordscapes is a game where essentially you're trying to find words in a puzzle. Like you get letters, you have like five letters and there's 10 words, and you've got to make different words with those letters. On its surface, it is like kind of an educational, neat game, but it is full of crap, like microtransactions of this. You can buy fireworks that unlock this or that. You can get little color stamps, and you've got to, you know, like you've got to like gotcha, put, you know, play enough games to get these sort of things. And in between every puzzle, they play an ad. okay, like a video ad that you can't skip until a certain point. Like it's almost unplayable. I was trying to play it. I'm like, this is borderline unplayable. Now you can pay $12.99 to eliminate all the ads from the game. Leaving the microtransactions, of course, but to eliminate all the ads. And we paid it for Gwen because it was just egregious. And there's a whole family of these games that are, they're very much like they're either pseudo-educational or they're like some like cartoon farming game, like do your own farm. And then it's like ad, like playing all the time. Like they're free to play, but like just like the most aggressive, like just disgusting ad, and you know, I'd be looking at Gwen and she's on the tablet and she's like, what's this game, Dad? And like, cause she'd be watching an ad for some game. And it was like the game itself that she would be seeing the ad for wouldn't be inappropriate, but it was the fact that she was like, oh, I'd be like, she was being hooked by these garbage ads to play another garbage game. And so like Wordscapes by itself, like we paid the money. She doesn't have ads for it. It's good. Like there's good stuff about it, even though it's packed to the gills with bullshit. But these tablet games, like even Clara, who's playing Toca Life World, which is like essentially a play set, a virtual play set, dollhouse and all that sort of stuff where you can move figures around. Like there'll be things that are locked, and it's and she asked for her birthday for us to buy her the hotel in Toca Life World, and I was like, how do you know about this? And she's like, because I went into the store. She's like 5 or 6 years old, and then she's like, there's a store. It's for kids. The game is for kids. It's not offensive, but she's seeing things, and if kids see stuff that they want, that's when they ask their parents. And that's why we were advertised to as kids. And that's why like advertising is trying to hit kids, because they will not let up on their parents when they want something. I want this. I want this. I want this. It's like maybe for your birthday, maybe for Christmas. You know, it's like there's no better salesman than kids. So if you can reach them with advertisement, then that's like a locked sale almost. And I just feel like, oh, they're like every, you know, like these tablet games, YouTube, like all of this stuff, it feels like it's pushing in more and more. It used to be so easy to keep them away from ads, and now it feels like it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah. You know, you're specifically mentioning like the games on the tablets, and our kids have Android tablets, which is very similar to the Fire mm-hmm. tablets. And what we did is we subscribe to Google Play Pass, which is Google's sort of Android or Apple Arcade thing, where it's $35 a year. Same subscription covers all three other tablets, and it makes games like the ones you described, like basically all unlocked. And again, because the kids don't understand like what games are out there, I just say to them like, hey, let's go to the app store, go to the Play Pass section, and you can download whatever game you want. Cause I know it's not, there's no payment thing attached to it. The tablets are completely locked down, but because you have the Play Pass, it removes that advertising side of it. Like, cause it's all unlocked. And like, I guess it's kind of funny that like our early, you know, time with our kids has really just been like avoiding traditional advertising as much as possible, to the point where we are like spending a little extra money to avoid it. Cause that was my thing. Like, I don't want to put a free to play game on those tablets, because it is constantly going to be popping up with, hey man, if you just had like 60 more, you know, jam energies, you'd be fine to,
I know, but see, like we thought we had bought a subscription like that. Amazon sure. has this Amazon Kids thing that you get all these games for free, and that it has been good up until this point, but now these games are full of this shit. So yeah, we will absolutely, like, I guess what that says to me, Ryan, is that yes, that like, if you're willing to throw money at the problem on different levels, like be it games or streaming service and whatever, you can like keep ads away from your kids as much for a lot longer than we were able to as kids, because like the TV box it had a monopoly. Like the best thing, the only thing you could do is change channels during an ad. And then there's a good chance there was an ad playing on the another channel at the same time.
You know, if you had other channels where I grew up, we had one channel.
Yeah. No, I was thinking that too. I'm like, I had like, you know, barely any channels. What I would say about advertising in kids in general is this time that you have where they're not like getting ads crammed down their face. Because look, the reality is, Ryan, at one point they are going to have ads crammed down their face. There's nothing we can do about that. We live in the world that we live in. They're going to come from all sorts of directions. We're not even going to see it. We're not even going to see it happening. And we'll, like you with the YouTube video in the classroom, it'll be like, where did you see this or where did you hear about this, right? So I think what we need to do as parents, or what we should do as parents with the luxury of the time that we have, but is talk to our kids about bullshit and about ads and about how ads work and what they're trying to do, and like have like mechanical conversations about advertising, about marketing, about how it works, so that they're not learning it for the first time by seeing something that they want, that they're able to see the thing what they want and realize kind of what's going on. That's not going to allow them to turn it off. They may still want the thing, but like, I think in terms of making them healthy, critical thinkers, which is necessary to surviving our capitalistic society, so we don't end up like the end of Fallout, or the wasteland of Fallout, with the post-capitalist, you know, wasteland of Fallout, then we got to make them critical thinkers. Yeah. So that involves having conversations about advertising before they're exposed to it. At least that's my 2 cents.
Of course. We've talked a lot about like having our kids avoid advertising, but I think that in order to have those educational conversations about advertising, like they are going to need to understand what ads are. And I think that a big one for me is like, and they learn it. It's a cheap, inexpensive lesson to learn. Like, you know, you're in McDonald's and like, you know, talking about things, you know, aren't what they used to be, is those damn toys. I remember when we were kids, like those toys were actually decent, you know. I mean, maybe that's just me remembering, and that's the nostalgia. Maybe they were always bad, but when our kids do occasionally get McDonald's, it's usually a very like a special occasion. Like, we don't go to McDonald's for food. Specifically Happy Meals, like meals, we'll maybe get like ice cream or something, but they'll occasionally get some Happy Meals. Usually grandma buys them McDonald's or something, and they'll get a toy, and like the toy is usually like, they don't know anything about the characters or whatever, and they're like, oh, what's this? And then it's usually some shitty toy that's like, they're learning like, oh, I want them Happy Meals so I can get the toy. It's like, well, you get the toy, but the toy's crap, you know, like it just doesn't work, or it's like broken, or it's missing pieces. And it's like, yeah, well, that's why you don't just immediately go for the thing that looks cool. Like, you have to be careful what you buy. And I think sometimes, you learn a lesson. I mean, even advertising, like when you look at like, oh, that looks really good. And then you order it, and it's like, it doesn't look at all like the picture. That's like everything you order at McDonald's. Like, I remember having a conversation with Caden at a restaurant, and we were having this chat about like, how come the thing I ordered doesn't look like the thing on the menu? It's usually like fast food, like Tim Hortons or McDonald's. And I say like, well, they make one really good one with more of the stuff that would make it, like a burger or a sandwich or something, but they only make one good one for the photo. Everything that they piece together for you to eat at the restaurant is just slap together 50% of the stuff that you might see in the photo. Like, the photo is just it's an artist's representation of the sandwich. Right. It's an advertisement. And I think like, you cannot shield your kid. Like, it might sound like, well, we're shielding our kids from advertising, but you cannot, you know, like, it's just a matter of like avoiding the egregious stuff. Like, so it's not constantly in front of them. And I think if you do have less advertising, like less is more, like you can kind of teach your kids. So when you walk down a toy aisle, like you can kind of, they can get an idea of like what's down there and stuff. But like, yeah, that's the only way my kids would know that there's like toys for every little show that it was ever made, you know, or Lego sets. God forbid if we got into Lego, that's expensive. But yeah, like I think you do have to have those conversations about advertising because they are going to see it and you're not going to be able to control every little thing that they see. So, but you know, you had mentioned YouTube for Kids, like YouTube for Kids doesn't have ads, but like most of the stuff that gets served to them is like the Paw Patrol of videos, you know, it is advertising. It may not have ads, but like it is like most shows, like actually some shows you'll see are like literally like adults playing with the toys and creating stories with those toys. It's basically a commercial, but it's legit like the toys that you would buy in the store. I remember seeing some of those and I'm like, yeah, we're not watching those. Like that's just the toys. You know, that is straight up. You can buy all these sets and have fun with them. But yeah, I mean, advertising's everywhere. And as you said, you're going to see it just driving down the street. So, but I still feel like avoiding as much as possible is the right way to go.
I think avoiding for as long as you can, take the advantage of that time to have the conversations with your kids. And so that when they eventually are exposed or able to be, you know, critical thinkers and stuff like that, I'll be honest, like Gwen is, you know, she's 10 going on 12 probably. And then it'll be 12 going on 18 or I don't know how it works. But like the reality is that, you know, I expect that she's still good with a simple life. But like at one point she'll be like, I want pants from Lululemon or like, you know, it's just going to be, it's going to be like brands and awareness. Like Gwen has, my kids have no awareness of like brands, you know, what's good or what's bad. Or it's like, what is like, what do people covet or what do they not covet, you know?
Yeah. And most of that stuff will come in from other sources, not even just advertising, but like. That is sometimes dictated by their friends or even by like what parents are into. Like we're not a brand name household, like where it's like, I got to have the best jeans ever. It's like, no, like Ashley buys them at Costco when they're on sale and I hope they fit.
But what about you know, that's clothes, but like, you know,
yeah.
If you're talking like, ooh, Apple products, or this is the only, you know, like good, this is the only good tablet or phone, or I only want that, like, you know, you give like Apple is a company with some cat, there's sure. there's all sorts of companies and all sorts of different disciplines, and it just creeps in depending on your, you know, your parents' interests and stuff. I'm learning recently, as my kids are into wrestling despite me making any concerted effort for them to get into wrestling, that the choices that I make are emulated and looked at and valued by my children at this stage in their life. And so I have to be cognizant of that more and more. And so like, if I'm affected by advertisement, or if I tell them, oh, this is a good thing, or this is a good product, or if I, and sometimes you do these things accidentally, or like there's no better advertisement for a company than a parent of a child. So like I would say to parents, like, just be mindful of what you're thinking and talking about. And like the way you're saying it, kids are listening all the goddamn time, you know, like, you know, we were talking about, Jesse and I were talking about our washing and dryer on the fritz. And we were talking about, I think they're GEs, and Jesse's like, I hate GE or whatever. She's like, it's not good. Like, let's go with something else, like LG or something like that. Let's forget that. And like, we were talking about it. And then later Gwen, at one point in a different context, was like, yeah, GE is no good or whatever. And I said, what, where did you get that? And she's like, Mom said it.
I learned it from you, Mom.
But it's true. It's just like they hear and feel all in that brand awareness that you are giving down. Like if Ryan is like, yeah, Netflix is garbage now. Like Crave is good. You know, then that's what Caden's going to think, right? And that's what he's going to say. And so it's just like we give all our words carry weight. That's not to be like, oh, we gotta be careful of everything we say, but it's just being cognizant of that regularly and be, you know, don't be surprised when your kid is into stuff that you're into or wants the best version of things that you say are the best, you know?
Yeah. You can also enjoy it while you have it, right? Because like, I think, as you said, like, you know,
Dad, that's so lame.
Well, not just that. I mean, I got we talked about the Amberneck last year. I got one for Father's Day and the kids were like, oh, this is so cool. I want one. And I'm like, oh man, it's so expensive. So I said, well, put video game player on your birthday list. And like, I went on to Amazon and I bought like the cheap, like, knockoff handheld that like, you know, 80-in-1 video game type thing. And I got one for Abby for her birthday. And then Caden got one for Christmas. It's not at all the same. It's not playing like ROMs or emulators or whatever. It's just playing like really, like I would probably put it the equivalent of like Palm Pilot games from back in the day. But like the kids are like, I have a portable video game player. That's now. I fully understand that as they get older and they start to understand the wide world of what's available, I won't be able to lean on that. And I think that also goes back to like, I say this to Ashley constantly. She sees it like parents buying their kids a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, man, start that early. And you're just going to watch it exponentially grow. Like,
yeah,
you know,
you're setting the baseline. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I can't. So when you talk about Apple products, like I look at my desk here, like I am recording on a Mac. I have like an Apple keyboard, an Apple trackpad. I have my iPhone.
That's why I chose Apple.
Yeah. I enjoy the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah. And I guarantee you that at one point or another, you've said something to Ashley in the ears of the kids about like, you know, I want the new iPhone or I want the new this or that. And like, it's just like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's natural. That's like, I just said, we did that with our washer and dryer. I'm sure I do it with countless things. But I will talk to them about brands and stuff too. Like Nintendo is a good one. I explained to Gwen how like, you know, I didn't have a Nintendo as a kid and like my friends did and it was something that I wanted, but that those characters have sort of like followed me around and like I have emotional attachment to them. But if she likes something else, that's cool too, you know. We were playing, you know, Sackboy and I was complaining the whole time about how it felt worse than Nintendo games. And Gwen turned to me and was, you know, she's like, you said that like, you know, it's good that other companies do these types of games. And I was like, yeah, I guess I did say that. You know, I'm trying to make her be a smart consumer, but obviously like I have a zillion Nintendo games. She's going to probably end up being a Nintendo fan if she's not already. Right. And that's like, you know, that's brand loyal to something. And I know advertisement in terms of like brand loyalty for something that is like Disney or Nintendo that is inherently full of stories and characters and stuff is almost a different thing, but it is like the most epic of all advertisements. Like if a company gets you in as a loyal fan, well then forget it. It's like, you're going to buy and your kids will likely buy as well. Not like the NSYNC buy, but like the spend money buy.
BUY.
I'm really tired.
Yeah. And you know, I think we've covered a good chunk of kids and advertising. So, a really great conversation. We're going to let Crofton go to sleep. Not on the podcast. Thank you. Got like two more minutes in you. We can kind of wrap this up.
Two minutes. Perfect. Two minutes, Bo. Let's go.
Okay. Did you just call me Bo?
Right. Mike, whatever. Just go.
Okay. Well, this has been Dungeons and Diapers, otherwise known as the exclamation point, otherwise known as good, bad, or bullshit, depending on which co-host Crofton thinks he's recording with. He's both in the past, but also present, thinking of the future and going to sleep. So you can visit us on the web, tgistudios.com/dad. Email the show, dad@tgistudios.com. Although really the best place to discuss the show is on Discord. Go to the Gamers in Discord at bit.ly/TGI Discord and join the discussion there in the Dungeons and Diapers channel. That's how we decided on this topic. It was part of a poll we ran a couple weeks ago. And yeah, so you never know when you can shape the show. Discord's the best place for it. So get on into that channel and talk about how Crofton should be asleep right now. But that is going to do it for our episode. Crofton, thank you so much for sticking with me and staying awake. That's going to do it. Have a great couple weeks, and we'll see you in a bit.
Bye, everybody.
And that coffee wore out quick.
I could not even, my brain is the words, you know?
This is his first strike.